Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Kuf Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 8 lines from the top of daf kuf vav. Before we begin the shiur, it appears that this particular shiur will continue, Mirtz Hashem, a bit longer daf-wise than the standard Daf Yomi 1 Daf Shiur. We might very well continue to Daf Kuf Zayin Omid Beis, 9 lines from the top. The reason is very simple. It's because as we get into the Sukya, when we get to Daf Kuf Vav Omid Beis, we will find ourselves in a position where we cannot break the Sukya in the middle of a discussion. It will be of critical importance for us to continue the trend of thought till the end, and that will take us till Daf Kuf Zayin Omid Beis. So, at the beginning of any shiur, we don't necessarily know where we will find ourselves later on, but it appears that that's the case at this point. Now, we open up today's Gemara with a reference to the teaching of Rav Huna that we saw in our previous year, at the very end of our previous year, and we have encapsulated this on the side under our No Sour topic heading, which reads, Nitba Shenishba Letovea She'ein Loi. A person who was sought out as having something, someone was laying a claim against someone, and the individual claimed from swore, albeit falsely, but swore that he doesn't have it. Kaina v'shuv ein mishalei mamon. Rav Huna, in the name of Rav, taught that he thereby acquires the item and has no longer any financial obligations. Afilu bo edim achakach. Even if witnesses show up later on, shemeidim shechayav, that testify that he really does owe the item, or does he has that item. Nevertheless, by the owner accepting the oath on the part of the party claimed from, that is it. That ends the story, and there's no more financial obligation. It's obvious, I'm sure, to all that as far as being considered a pious individual, far from it, he's lied, sworn falsely, etc., and so forth, making him no angel. However, as far as a financial obligation is concerned, by taking the oath, he frees himself from paying later on. Gufa. Gufa is a term whereby the Gemara focuses on something that had been mentioned in passing earlier. Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rav, Mona li biyodcha. Someone claims you owe me a mona. A mona, let's say $100. Vahalo Omer, and the other party claims, Ein l'cha b'yadi klum. I have nothing of yours. I don't owe you anything. Finish ba. And he swears to that effect. Ubo edim. And then witnesses come testifying to the contrary, that he really does owe that money. Potter, by having sworn that and denying owing the item, owing the amount, he is now exempt. Shenemar v'lokach be'olov v'lo yishalein. That is, of course, a pasuk from Shmos Perek Chof Beis, and we learn from this pasuk, Kevon shekiblu b'ilim shvua. Once the owner accepts the oath, shuv ein mishalmen mamon. There is no longer any obligation to pay to compensate. Omar Rava. Mistabra milse de Rav bemilve. It's most likely that Rav's teaching is with regard to a loan where someone borrowed money, denied having taken the loan, swore that he doesn't owe any loan. Money that one borrows is borrowed with the expectation that it is going to be spent. So it's not around. The loan money is not around. It's not assumed to be around. Rashi, on the third narrow line from the top, it's something that would require, in general, to be paid back. And there's room to say that in exchange for the oath, he is thereby exempted from making the payment. As the pasuk says, he swears and he now doesn't have to pay up. So that the teaching of Rav Huna Marav that a shvua is a means of achieving exemption would have relevance in the case of a loan. The loan is a type of debt that in general we would describe as something that you have to yishalem, you would have to pay it back. Avol, we continue in the Gemara. However, Rava says, in contrast, pikadon, someone given an item to watch, the term paying back is irrelevant to pikadon. With regard to pikadon, birshusei demore koi, it is considered, even though it's given to a shomer, a bailey, to watch, it's considered in the possession of the original owner. The term yishalem has no relevance. Yishalem is to pay back. That is relevant to an item that is in the domain of one and needs to be paid back to the original party. But when the item is legally considered in the possession of the original party at all times, then the Torah isn't addressing that. And therefore, an oath concerning a pikadon, a false oath concerning a pikadon, would not be the basis, says Rava, of the shomer acquiring it. And yet, voy lakim, lakim is an expression. Like people use expressions like that in trying to make a point. Omar Rav afilu bepikadon. Rav said his din even in the case of an entrusted item. The chiksiv kro, the posuk of alokach bala v'lo yishalem bepikadon ksiv. It's written in the context of a paid shomer, a shomer sochar, a paid bailey, so that the Torah, when it makes reference to the owner accepting an oath and thereby exempting the swearing party from having to pay, has relevance to the case of pikadon, entrusted articles, as well. Yosef Rav Nachman v'komar loha shmeitza. Rav Nachman was seated and he said Rav Huna's teaching. Esvei Rav Acho bar Menyumi le Rav Nachman. You'll notice we have a triangle, and if you allow your eye to scan down the page, you'll notice how triangles appear fairly often in alternating directions. Under our Mivneh heading on the side and in the margin, you'll notice that we have a triangle, Ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take structure. Kushos Aldino Shel Rav Huna Marav, the triangle pointing up, presents questions on Rav Huna's teaching. The inverted triangle, Tshuva's responses. A bow tie shape will appear, and we've indicated the bow tie, Havlotas Tshuva's Shenitnu Avur Rav, highlighting the answers that are given to defend Rav. You'll see the expression Chutz Lebeizdin is highlighted, and later an expression Kofatz. And we indicate Shuvas Elu Muzkaros B'chol HaSugya. These terms will appear throughout the entire discussion. That doesn't mean that we're going to be highlighting those terms throughout the entire discussion, but the concepts of Chutz Lebeizdin and Kofatz, which we haven't explained yet, these are terms that will appear throughout the discussion. Now, the Gemara. Esvei Rav Acho bar Menyumi l'Rav Nachman. We read this before, that Rav Acha raises a question. He presents the question to Rav Nachman, but as we said, it's a question on Rav Huna Omar Rav. Also, we've written in between the lines that this is the Reisha. Later, on the third wide line of the Gemara, a reference will be made to the Seifa, the end part of the source. So it's just important to keep things straight. This is the beginning of that which later will refer to as the continuation of this source as the Seifa. So it says, Heichon Pikdoni, someone asks, where is my entrusted article? Amale, so the one claimed from, responds, Ovad, it's lost. Mashbiocha ani, the Omar Omein. The owner says, well then swear to that effect, and he confirms that it was lost, that it got lost. Vo'edim me'idim oso sh'ochloi, and witnesses come and testify that he consumed it himself. The one charged with it, we'll call the shomer that was charged with it, actually took it for himself. Mishalem esakeren. He has to pay the principal value. Hoide me'atzmo, if he confessed that he consumed it himself after having sworn, mishalem keren v'choy mishrosham, he pays back the principal, an added fifth and a guilt offering, for the fifth and the guilt offering are characteristic of a false oath that one subsequently confessed to. Let's take a look at the Rashi, Hoide Me'atzmo. Rashi is a few lines up from here in the Rashi commentary. He had confessed Le'achar Shvuah after having falsely sworn. Kotoni Mi'ah Reisha, it says in the Reisha, in this section, Mishalim Karen Al Yedei Edim, that through witnesses testifying that he has it, that he consumed it, he has to pay. V'kashilarov, this is a challenge to Rav. The Omar, Rav said, Kevon Shinishba lo yishalem, afilu bo edim. Rav said that once you swear, you don't have to pay, even if witnesses come afterwards. Rashi adds, Umiseifa lo porich de behoivi lo koma Rav, from the Seifa, that means the latter part of this source, of this section, that was the base marking, you don't have any kasha on Rav. Why? Because Rav did not say his din where the individual subsequently confesses. The hog siva heshivas agzela ubenishba v'hoide mishtoi kro. The pasuk demands you shall return the stolen item. That is in a case where a person swore and admitted. So Rav isn't going to say something contrary to the verse. However, where there's no admission, as you saw in the Aleph section of the framed piece that we read, there was no confession. There was merely an oath. And we see in the Tanaic source that you do have to pay, where Rav led us to believe otherwise. Let's continue now in the Gemara. Omar le Rav Nachman, hocha b'mayaskinon kegoin denishba chutz lebeizdin. This source that speaks about an oath, but not effective in acquiring on behalf of the challenged party, doesn't exempt him because the oath was taken outside of the court. That's a weak type of oath. Rashi says, lo alimo shvua lafkui mimun. It's not a strong enough type of oath. It doesn't have the sense of severity and authority that an oath would usually bequeath unto the one who swears thusly when the oath is taken, is made outside of the court. Omar lay, we continue in the Gemara, Omar lay, so Rav Acha, who raised the question, he continues questioning, Iachi, Eimot Seifa. If so, that it's a chutz lebeizdin oath, well, how do you make sense then of the continuation of the source? It reads, Heichon Pikdoni, where is my entrusted article? Omar lo nignav. Fellow responds, the shomer responds, it was stolen. Mashbiochani, well then, swear to that effect. Omein, and he confirms that through an oath. He swears that that is the case, that it was stolen. For Edom, Me'edom, Oysoi, Shigonvoi, and witnesses testify that he, the Shomer, the Bailey himself, made off with it. Meshalem, Tashlume, Kefel. A double payment must be made. The double payment, which is characteristic of Geneva, when a Shomer claims thusly and falsely, he has to pay Kefel. That's, again, the double amount. If he confessed on his own, Mishalim Karen v'Chaimish v'Asham. The principal plus a fifth and a guilt offering must be brought, as we explained earlier. The Isaka Daita Chutz LeBeisdin, if, as you answered before, that the source is dealing with an oath outside of Beisdin, Mi Ika Kefel, is there a double payment that's imposed on false oaths of Geneva outside of Beis Din? As you can see from the question, there's a given here that oaths taken outside of Beis Din do not impose a double payment. Omar Lay, so Rav Nachman says, Yachilna Lushnuyaloch, I could have answered you, Reisha Chutz LeBeis Din. The oath outside of court, the ratio was speaking about an oath outside of Beis Din, hence it doesn't acquire. And that's why we saw that the witnesses who subsequently testified that the Shomer consumed it himself, the Shomer has to pay. And the Seifah, where there is Kefel, that's Beis Din. However, Miu Shinuya Dechiko Lo Mishanin Olach. Forced answers, like Shinui Dechiko, we would call forced answers or contrived answers, I don't like giving those things. In other words, to set up one Tanaic source with a Reisha and a Seifa referring to two different locations where the oath is taken in two different locations is a very weak kind of answer. Rather, Evi V'Evi B'Beisdin, both the Reisha and the Seifa are oaths taken in the court. In other words, we're going to drop the answer of Chutz LeBeis Din. Remember, we have a bow tie around that, so we're dropping that. And both the Reish and the Seifa are in Beis Din. Velo Kashya, and that, yet there's no Kashya on Rav. Why not? We saw in the Reisha the oath was not effective in acquiring. Because the answer is, it's the reason it's ineffective is kan b'kofatz, kan b'shelo kofatz. In the Reisha, an oath was taken before the court ordered him to swear. Kofatz literally means he jumped. He jumped ahead of the gun, and he swore before the oath was imposed on him. That kind of oath is weak, and it doesn't enable the charged party to thereby acquire. The Seifa, though, kan b'shelo kofatz, the Seifa that spoke about the false oath leading to paying kefel, was a court-imposed oath. Let us look at the Rashi together. Just a few lines up from here. Kan b'kofatz, b'resha, in the first part of the source, dekotoni mishalem, where it said he had the charged party has to pay. Kishikofatz ze vishbioi kodim shechayvu beizdin, where the party laying claim imposed the oath before the court imposed the oath. V'chikoma Rav, Rav's din that a shvua acquires and exempts you from subsequent payment below kofatz. V'adayonim ishbi'uhu, there was no jumping ahead of the court, and rather the judges imposed the oath. V'kanya is shvua, that kind of oath acquires on behalf of the charged party. The pasuk of the lokach be'olav that we cited before is an oath imposed by the judges. Even though the seifa is not explained with kofatz because it spoke about having to pay the double amount, V'keifa lo yisei elo b'shvus ha-dayanim, and a double payment is possible only if it's a judge-imposed oath, not kofatz, where you jumped ahead of the judges to impose the oath. Mikomokom reisha b'kofatz. Nevertheless, the reisha is talking about a case of kofatz. Now, didn't we say before that it was a shinuya d'chika to say that the reisha was chutz lebeisin and the sefer was in beisin, and we changed the answers to say that both reisha and sefer were in beisin? But aren't you doing the same thing now by saying that the reisha is kofatz and the sefer is lo kofatz? So Rashi answers, "V'nichole lukmi betray gavni ubechaduchta." It's easier. It's an easier approach to set up reisha and sefer in two different situations, but both taking place in one location, both in the Beis Din. V'lo lukmi b'shnei makomos, and as opposed to what Rav Nachman called was a shinuya d'chika before, by setting up the reisha and sefer as oaths in two different locations. Rashi adds more valuable information. The seifa lo kashile l'rav. In the seifa, did we not see a person swearing and yet having to pay kefel? Wouldn't that maybe be a problem for Rav that said that once you swear, you acquire? So Rashi says it's not a problem for Rav. Even though the source says you pay double, and certainly when you speak about paying double, that includes the principal amount. As we said, you still have to pay that. It's not a problem for Rav. The Moide Rav, Rav concedes that in a case of a shomer claiming that it was stolen and swearing to that effect that it was stolen and it's a lie, Rav concedes that you don't acquire, you don't exempt yourself. A shvua that obligates the party to pay double is not a kind of shvua that enables you to be exempt from the principle. So a shvua of nignav is a shvua that would mechayev him in kefel, so the whole concept of a shvua being a means of acquiring or exemption from subsequent payment has no relevance. So we've seen already Rav and his dramatic law that by swearing you acquire. We've seen already some qualifications to that. We saw that Rav did not say his din in the case of Hoideh, where you confess, and we see that Rav doesn't say his din in a case of a shvua that's mechayev kefel. As you can see, we now have a bracketed section. Following the bracketed section, you'll notice again a triangle pointing up appears, which of course indicates a new question will be raised against Rav Huna Amar Rav. But before we get to that, the reason for the brackets, we have a note in the margin, the double starred note, and it reads Achrei HaSugrayim, after the brackets, Hagmor Mamshicha Him Hatkafois Al Rav. And we'll continue with its challenges to Rav. Within the brackets, Rami Bar Chama pointed to Rav Nachman. Rami Bar Chama turns to Rav Nachman v'shelos and asks him, "Lomahu mogain al Rav? Why are you, Rav Nachman, trying to defend Rav me'achar delo sever kamaisai when you don't even hold like Rav?" So we have a fascinating example of something that's unique to the Talmud, to the Gemara, where we'll say truth is sought out, clarity is sought out, even if it's not in your own personal interest, so to speak. The Gemara. Now we're going to continue in the bracketed section, having already noted that we're going to continue with our questions on Rav after this section. Omer le Rami bar Chama le Rav Nachman. Rami bar Chama turns to Rav Nachman, who you can see was defending. We saw inverted triangles a couple of times, and each time it was Rav Nachman responding to challenges raised by Rav Acha. So Rami bar Chama asks Rav Nachman, Michti de Rav lo svira loch, you personally don't hold from Rav's teaching, namely that someone who swears, even though it's a false oath, thereby acquires the item for himself, gains exemption from subsequent paying. You don't hold by that. Moshchuni nafshoch ad Rav loma loch, literally drawing yourself in defense of Rav. What do you do that for? Why do you do that? Omale, so Rav Nachman answers, Lifrusha lederav. All I am trying to do is explain things in accordance with Rav, namely, derav hochi mitaretz lo lemasnisen, to explain how Rav would explain the Tanaic source. We saw above the Tanaic source, the Reisha and the Sefer of a Tanaic source that was quoted. I'm showing you how Rav would explain that source. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm not, of course, that doesn't indicate that I accept Rav's teaching, simply to show how Rav, who was the greatest of the Amoraim, how he would understand the Tanaic sources quoted. The Gemara asks, how can you not hold by Rav? Rav Kro Komar. Rav cited a pasuk in support of his teaching, namely the pasuk of Velokach Bola Velo Yishalem. So the Gemara says, Oma Amri, you can explain alternatively, Kro, the pasuk has a different purpose other than that which Rav explained. What is the role of the pasuk? Lekol Hanishmoy Shebetorah. The Krah, the Pasuk, teaches a point that we mentioned earlier, that all those who swear, as far as the Torah is concerned, Nishboin velo mishalmin hu, da'asa. It's coming to tell me that you swear in order to exempt yourself from a payment that you're being charged with. The Pasuk says, Velokach be'olav velo yishalem. And how is that understood? Me, Sha'olav L'Shalem, the one upon whom payment is expected, who Nishba, he is the one that would swear to exempt himself from paying. So that in standard fare, where a person is claimed as owing money, he, the one claimed from, would be expected, if he wants to deny, he would be expected to swear, saying, I don't owe the money. That's in contrast with what one with the alternative of someone who is laying claim to money, swearing that the money is owed to me, and thereby collecting by virtue of swearing thusly. As far as the Torah is concerned, that's not the way things work, but rather the one who is being charged is the one that would swear to bolster his claim of exemption. Just to repeat the main point as far as the Pasuk is concerned, that is the way others would understand the Pasuk, as opposed to the way Rav understood the Pasuk, as being grounds for swearing and thereby gaining exemption from any further payment, even in the event that witnesses show up later. Let us continue in the Gemara. Mosiv Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna raises a Tanaic source, and if you skip for a moment the framed section, Rav Hamnuna is raising a question, and the answers that we gave before, where the Gemara, after the framed section, will say, V'ocha kofatz lo motzis amris, and likewise, in the middle of that line, chutz lebeis din lo motzis amris. The answers that we gave before, in defense of Rav, namely the answers that we had highlighted above in the bow ties, one will not be able to give over here. And that's going to be, the source of strength of Rav Hamnuna's question. Now the Gemara. Mosiv Rav Hamnuna. Hishpialov Hamisha Pomim. An oath was imposed 5 times. Bain b'fnei basin, bain shalo b'fnei basin. V'kofer olav. Each time a person was made to swear, and he denied under oath, I don't owe you money, and then he was made to swear again, and he said, I don't owe you. It repeated itself several times, 5 times. Chayav al kol achas v'achas. He will, eventually when he's shown to be lying, having lied, he's going to have to pay a chomesh and bring a sacrifice. Chomesh is an additional fifth, and a sacrifice, a separate guilt offering for each one of these false oaths. Yom Rav Shimon, ma tam, and Rav Shimon explains, what's the reason? Hoyo v'yochol lachzor lahoidos. Since at each point, he could have confessed and thereby obligated himself to pay, the subsequent oath is a denial then of that money that he would have been obligated to pay. What do we see from here? We see from here that the fact that he swears doesn't relieve him of the need to pay. Here, we can't say that it's a weak type of shvua because of kofats, because in the source that we just read it, hishbiel of katani. You notice that we dot underline that phrase. Hishbiel of means the oath was imposed upon him by the court. Chutzlebezen lo motzis amris. To say, well, it was a weak kind of oath whereby he doesn't acquire exemption because it was taken outside of Beis Din, outside of the court, that you can't say, Bifnei Beis Din Katani. We dot underline that phrase also in the source. So we have a court-imposed oath in the court, a very, we'll say, strong, authoritative type of oath, and it doesn't acquire on his behalf. Hu moisiv law v'hu mefarek law. Rav Hamnuna raised the question, and he also answers the question. Litzdodin kotoni. We take this source and we split it. Litzdodin literally means two different sides. Take note, by the way, of the fact we have a Roman numeral 1 in a diamond. We're going to a Roman numeral 1 indicates that there's going to be a number 2 later on, and you'll see that in just in a few lines. What does Rav Hamnuna say? That the source really isn't a problem for Rav. Hishbia olav, the expression in the source that spoke about court imposing the shvua, that was chutz lebeis din. That, however, took place outside of the court. It wasn't in, it was, a shvua was imposed upon him, but outside the court. Therefore, it's not a shvua, it's not an oath that acquires on behalf of the charged individual. Ubebased in kofats, and then when he entered the court proper, the party jumped, literally lurched forward in swearing before the judges imposed the shvua on him. So that you have two separate scenarios. A person swearing 5 times, but outside the court, or a case of a shvua, an oath taken in the court, but not imposed by the judges, rather kofats. In those cases, as we explained earlier, the shvua is not solid enough, not authoritative enough for him to thereby acquire the item, acquire and gain exemption from any subsequent payment. Mosiv Rava. Again, you see a triangle pointing up, And if you looking at this Tanaic source, just skip the frame for a second. And what does it say afterwards? The answers that we've been giving till now cannot be given in as far as this source is concerned. So what does it say? And this should be familiar. We've seen this before. Mosiv Rava Balabayas Shetan Tainas Ganav Pikodon, an owner of an item claimed from a shomer. I should say, let me correct myself. Balabayas, in this case, is the someone given an item to watch. He claims it was stolen. That's Tainas Ganav Pikodon. He claims it was stolen. Venishba, and he swears to that effect. Vehoida, and then confessed that he lied. Ubo Edim, and witnesses came. Im ad shalobo Edim hoideb, if his confession was before the witnesses showed up. The witnesses, of course, testifying that he himself made off with it. It wasn't stolen by a thief. So if the confession was before witnesses showed up, then Mishalim Keren v'choymish v'osham, he pays only the principal, and adds a fifth. I say only a principal to the exclusion of a double payment. That he pays a principal plus a fifth and a guilt offering. If his confession was only after witnesses testified that he made off with the item and it wasn't stolen by a thief, then Mishalim Teshlume Kefil V'Asham, he has to pay double and bring a guilt offering. There's no fifth that's paid, because the fifth is associated with confession, which didn't take place. Didn't take place immediately. V'hocha chutz lebeizdin v'kofatz lomotzes amris. Those examples, answers of a shvua taken out of an oath outside of the court, or lunging forth before it being imposed, cannot be offered here, because Kefel Katani, the source, speaks about the imposition of a double payment. And we alluded to this before in the Rashis that we read, that Kefel would indicate an authoritative type of oath only in Beis Din that was court imposed. So what do we see from here? We see a very strong type of oath. That's why we dashed the line Nishba in the source. And yet, he's still obligated to pay. Is that not a problem for Rav Huna Omar Rav? The Gemara answers, Elo Omar Rava. Kol Hoide. If you skip the bracketed phrase, just to the next line right underneath, you see Kol Hoide Lo Omar Rav. That skipping enables us to read Rava's point more smoothly. Rav, who said an oath acquires, did not say that when the party himself confesses that he lied. When you confess that you lied, the Torah itself imposes upon you the obligation to pay. Now let's go over the portion that we skipped in the brackets. Omar Rava, Kol Hoide, any time you're dealing with the charged party confessing, Lo Shna Tayin Tainas Ovad, Velo Shna Tayin Tainas Ganav, whether he initially claimed that he, meaning the shomer, initially claimed it was lost, or if he claimed it was stolen, when he confesses to having lied, Lo Omar Rav Rav did not say that the oath acquires exemption. To Haksiv, the Pasuk says, V'his Vada, in Bamidbar, Perek Hey Pasuk Zayin, it says, V'his Vada, and he confessed. And in that Pasuk, you see, the boy Shlumi Karen V'choymash, you have to pay You must pay the principal and a fifth. Another point that Rav makes, that Rava makes. That's why, by the way, we have a little two lines up. We had a Rava with above Rava, between Rava and Kol, we had a little one. Rava explains that Rav didn't say his halacha of Shavua Kaina in a case of Hoida. Number two, Toyen Tainas Ganavu Bo Eidim Nami Lo Omar Rav. In the case of the initial oath being a false oath of stolen, it was stolen, and then witnesses come countering that, Rav did not say his halacha there either. Dog Siv Tashlume Kefel. The Torah speaks in terms of some a shomer that lied with the claim of Ganav, and then witnesses come and say that he lied. The Torah says you have to pay double. The shomer has to pay double. Now when we say the shomer has to pay double, it shows that the oath didn't acquire. Rav isn't going to say a halacha that's against what the Torah expects. Ki koma Rav. Rav's din, that an oath acquires, gains for you exemption, even if witnesses show up later. Ki koma Rav kegon shetoni tanis ovad. If the claim that the shomer is making is a claim of it was lost. Now that's in contrast to the claim of it was stolen. If the shomer claims it was lost and he swore v'nishba, v'loy hayde, and he doesn't confess, u'bo'u edim, and witnesses come and say that he lied, under circumstances like that, even though witnesses show up, the shomer is exempt. The marking that we have in our Mark Gemaras, you notice a semicolon, and we have a little note on the side why we put this in. The start note reads as follows: Simanu, this semicolon, we mark this in, laharois, to show. The discussion back and forth concerning Rav's opinion has come to an end. In other words, the direct attacks on Rav have ended. As the Gemara continues, we'll analyze Rava's answer, so that we're not finished with the entire sugya, but our focus is now on Rava. Ozal Rav Gamda v'omro l'shmeitze kamei d'Ravashi. Rav Gamda went forth and said over that which Rava taught, that kol hoide lo omar Rav. Rava said that where the charged party who swore falsely confessed. So Rav did not say that you gain exemption. So this is what Rav Gamda said to Ravashi. Omar lay, and Ravashi responded. And he asks, how could Rava say that? And here's the question. Hashta Uma Rav Hamnuna Talmidei de Rav. We have a little star to the side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the star above. And on the line above, where the star above, on that line we had a triangle pointing up with Rav Hamnuna, Mosif Rav Hamnuna. So we're making reference to what the Gemara did over there. Ravashi is bothered, and he says, mind you, Rav Hamnuna Talmidei de Rav. Rav Hamnuna was a student of Rav. V'yoda de Omar Rav Hoide. Rav Hamnuna knew that Rav said his point of Shvua gaining exemption for the one that swears. Even in a case where he confesses. Rav went all the way that a shvua acquires on the behalf of the one that swears, even if he were to confess later on. Which is, that's against Rava. Now Rav Hamnuna knew how far Rav went. The Kamoisib Haida. And Rav Hamnuna raised a source in which we saw Haldah. That even after one is Maideh, there is an obligation to pay. The At Amris and you, Rava, are saying Hoyda Lo'oma Rav, that Rav did not say his halacha in the case of Hoyda. To present this using other words, according to you, Rava, there was no room for Rav Hamnuna to raise his question. But Rav Hamnuna was a student of Rav, and he knew how far Rav went. And yet, Rav Hamnuna, and as a result of that, Rav Hamnuna raised his question. Namely, in the source that Rav Hamnuna quoted, you saw that even after the liar admits, he still has a financial obligation. And what we just said is counter to what Rava had said in explaining Rav. Omar le Rav Achosava le Ravashi. Rav Achosava responds on behalf of Rava. He responds to Ravashi. Now Ravashi was the last one speaking who had raised his difficulty with Rava. So Rav Achosava responds to Ravashi as follows. What Ravacha has to do here is present Rav Hamnuna in such a way that we don't have a question on how Rava presented Rav. So the Gemara explains, Rav Hamnuna hochi kokashiole. Rav Hamnuna thusly was presenting his question. The question that was bothering Rav Hamnuna with regard to Rav, through which he raised the Tanaic source, is as follows. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. And we preface simply by saying that where someone swears falsely, Rav would not, where someone swears falsely and confesses, Rav would not have said his halacha that you gain exemption. Rather, it's certain that if he would be moida after the shvua, if he confessed after the shvua, he has to pay, just like Rava said. But what was Rav Hamnuna's question? E amris bishlamo nishba ki osu edim mechayev. If you say that after swearing, and witnesses then come and testify otherwise, you have to pay. And at that idea is against Rav, and hence this is what Rav Hamnuna was asking. According to Rav, once you're nishba, you acquire exemption. So Rav Hamnuna was saying, if you say contrary to that nishba, where one swears and then edim come, you do have to pay. Amtu lahachi mechayvinon lekorban ashvua basraisa. I understand why after he swears multiple oaths, even concerning the last oath, he has to bring a korban for having lied. Why? Hayil v'yachol achzer lahaydais. Since he could have admitted, and at that point, you'd have to pay money. And that, of course, is fine as far as Rava is concerned, because Rava pointed out that when you are Maida, so you don't have to, you don't gain exemption. Eloi Amris Kiyosu Edim Potter, if you're going to say, like Rav said, that once you swear, you gain exemption, even if witnesses come afterwards. Mi iko miti, could there be anything the ilu osi sadi umisadi be potter, that witnesses showing up later, you would still be exempt? Vanan neku nechayve korban ashvua hayl v'yochol achzul oidais. Should we impose upon such an individual a sacrificial obligation for his false oath on the grounds that he could have confessed? Hashtomi has all odi. In the meantime, though, he hasn't confessed. And then all we would have, if you accepted Rav's halacha, says Rav Hamnun in his question, you would have had someone swearing falsely, gaining exemption from having to pay, even if witnesses would show up later on. Why then is he chayev for multiple false oaths on the grounds that he could have confessed? In the meantime, he hasn't confessed. If, however, as we said earlier, upon taking a false oath, the subsequent appearance of witnesses would have obligated him to pay, so we can see that each subsequent false oath is an oath that has within it the potential of his having to pay. And hence, each denial was a denial of Momon, Kfiras Momon. But as far as Rava's explanation that a person who swears falsely and subsequently admits, the person is not exempt from paying. That is exactly what Rav himself would concede to. Let us read the Rashi on the second narrow line. Hashto mihas ha lo oidi. Bein zu lezu, between each shivua, he didn't admit. Ve'ishtakach the kfirus tvorim ve'almahu, in his oath denying owing the item, he was swearing a mere denial v'lav mamonahu. A mere denial of words, we'll say, but not something financial. V'lav mamona hu gavei. There's no financial issue. Sharei ein yochol lahotzio be'edim, according to Rav, that having taken the oath, you thereby acquire it, and the subsequent appearance of witnesses would not obligate you. So you're not, at this point that you took the oath, you're not obligated concerning any financial restitution. Why then is there multiple shvua penalty, when we've explained already numerous times that the shvua penalty, which obligates you in bringing a sacrifice, is only when there's kfiras mamon? Here there's no kfiras mamon. As long as he hasn't confessed, There's no Kriyas Mamon, according to Rav's original teaching. And it was with regard to all of this that Rav Hamnuna eventually answered that the Shvua spoken of in the source was a Shvua that was really not strong enough for him to really acquire exemption. Rav Hamnuna explained, Litzdodin Katani, without going over the whole answer. Again, of course, you can look back there. Before we go further in the Gemara, let us take note of the Mivneh, the structural note. We've written under the Mivneh heading, He'ora ala Mivneh, a little, a point to make regarding the general Gemara structure, ad Kuf Zayin Amud Beis. That means from this point until Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, Yesh Kama Sugyos HaMishulavoi Zubazu. We'll find several topics that actually are, let's say, intertwined with one another. Derech HaSimunim Nisinu Lahavlit Dvorim HaKshurim Zu Lezu. Through the markings that we'll be featuring, we've tried to create a certain connection between these different topics. The house marking, you'll see, highlights Havlotus Reb Chiya Bar Abba. Reb Chiya Bar Abba will appear throughout the discussion a number of times, so we're highlighting his name with the house marking. The double underline will highlight the expression Atayin Tainas Ganav. A shomer claims the item was stolen. I say the shomer, that's to be taken with a certain amount of, let's say, qualification. We'll see more about that in the Gemara. But a person who claims something was stolen. And the diamond marking, Havlotas Pikadon Oyaveda. And I said the word shomer in a circumspect fashion that has primary relevance to a case of pikadon, an item that with which you were entrusted. There's another scenario where a claim of Tainas Ganav, a claim of it having been stolen, can arise. That's a case where you found an item, and you claim after the owner says, well, give me back the item that you found, the party can claim it, well, it was stolen. Of course, when we speak about Tain Tainas Ganav, ultimately the fellow was lying. On the in our margin, we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads as follows. Hatain Tainas Ganav V'Pikadon, person was given something to watch, and he claims that it was stolen, which is an exemption if you're an unpaid Bailey or a Shomer Chinam. Shomer Chinam is not obligated to compensate in the case that the entrusted item was stolen. And then witnesses show up indicating that he lied. Mishalim Kefel. So the Shomer will have to pay the double amount. Tavahu Mochar Mishalim Dalet Vehei. If the Shomer has slaughtered it or sold it, he'd have to pay the additional multiple payments, leading up to either four or five times the value of the original item. We're familiar with Tavahu Mochar in the case of a standard thief who steals an item from an owner, and then if it's an animal, a sheep or a cow, he then sells it or slaughters it, so he has to pay four or five times. Here, we're talking not about the actual thief, but we're talking about the shomer who claimed falsely that it was stolen, that he would eventually have to pay four or five in the event that he sold it or slaughtered it. Now we turn to the Gemara. Omer of Chiyah Bar Abba, Omer of Yochanan, Hatoyin Tainas Ganav V'Pikadon, an item that was given to you as a pikaron, an entrusted item to watch, and you claim as a shomer, you claim it was stolen. And turns out that you lied. Mishalim tashlumei kefil, you have to pay the double amount. That's the amount that a standard thief would have to pay if he stole it. Tovach u'mochar, if the shomer slaughters it or sells it, mishalim tashlumei arba v'chamisha. Now we explain. Now notice we have a long point. We're masbir, how do we get to this? How do we come to this conclusion that a shomer too claiming tainas ganav could end up with the 4 or 5 payment? Hayol the ganav mishalem tashlume kefel, the toyin tainas ganav mishalem tashlume kefel. These are two, we'll say, givens that a thief pays double. A shomer that claims it was stolen and is lying pays double. Ma ganav shu mishalem kefel tovachu mocher mashan tashume arba v'chamisha. Just like the ganav who pays double, we know from the Torah if he slaughters or sells it would have to pay 4 or 5 times. Af toyein tainas ganav v'pikadon, so to the shomer who made the claim of nignav, kishu mishalem tashume kefel tovachu mocher mashan tashume arba v'chamisha, being someone that also is obligated in paying the kefil, as we said, that was our given, he too would end up having to pay 4 or 5 in the event that he slaughtered or sold it. The Gemara asks, how can you derive the case of the shomer from the case of the ganav? Ma leganav shekein mishalim tashlumei kefil shelo b'shvua. A ganav pays kefil by the mere fact that he stole it by his wayward action, even without any false oaths. Should I say the same thing regarding a shomer? He doesn't pay kefil unless it's accompanied by a false oath. Therefore, the case of the shomer can't be derived from the case of the ganav. That's a pretty solid question. Then how can Rabbi Yochanan tell us that Toyin Tainas Ganav ends up with a 4 or 5 payment just like a Ganav? So we have two answers, and they're highlighted with this crown shape. Number one, Amri Hekeshahi. The case of the Toyin Tainas Ganav is compared in the Torah to the case of Ganav, and by the proximity of the two topics, we call that a hekish. The ein meshivin allocation. We don't raise logical questions when the Torah makes its own comparison. So therefore, even though you might have questions like to raise, just like we said, we don't raise questions on a hekish. A hekish is one of the forms of, the Torah through the oral law in reaching conclusions. Well, is that really so, though, that the topic of Toyin Tainas Ganav is compared to the case of Geneva? Ha Nicha Leman Domar, that works out well according to one of two opinions that we saw back in the 7th Perek of our Masechta, back in Perek Meruba, the beginning of Perek Meruba, where we saw the psukim referred to, and we said that chad beganav v'chad betoyin tainas ganav shapir, where one posuk was referring to the thief, and the next posuk in proximity is referring to toyin tainas ganav shapir. Then you can say that the Torah compares the two. Elo leman domar hai im yimotzei haganav ve'im lo yimotzei. These two psukim, Travayu betoyin tainas ganav, both psukim referring to a shomer that falsely claims it was stolen. So both psukim are dealing specifically with the case of a shomer. Ma'i kolamemar, where do you find the shomer case, the toyin tainas ganav, compared to a ganav? You don't see any comparison, and therefore you can't come to the conclusion that a Tainas Ganav will have to pay 4 or 5. What's the basis of coming to such a conclusion? The Gemara answers, Amri, Ganav, Haganav. There's a hey in the Pasuk. Imimotse Haganav. So by virtue of the hey, we say that the Pasuk itself was referring to Toyin Tainas Ganav, and there's a reference, there's a hint to a Ganav as well. So we say that Toyin Tainas Ganav, like the Ganav, will eventually have to pay 4 or 5 if he, the Shomer, after swearing falsely that it was stolen, actually sold it or slaughtered it as well. Esve Rabbi Achio Bar Abba or Rabbi Yochanan. What's very interesting to note is that up till now, Rabbi Achio Bar Abba was quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, having said that Toyin Tainas Ganav could actually come to a 4 or 5 payment. Now, Rabbi Achio Bar Abba on his own raises a question on Rabbi Yochanan. We have a Tanaic source regarding a Shomer that claims it was stolen. Heichon Shori, owner says, where's my ox? And Shomer says, Nignav, it was stolen. Mashbi Ochani, well then, I want you to swear to that effect. The Omer Omein, and he confirms that through an oath. V'edim Yidu Yisoy Shochloi, and witnesses claim that he consumed it. Mishalem Tashlume Kefel. He has to pay the double payment. Now, notice we dashed underline she'ochlo. The witnesses claim, or testify, that the shomer ate the animal. The ha-ha-ha di'efshu li'gezayis bosu b'lo shchita v'katoni mishan d'shomei kefel. You can't eat even an olive quantity of meat unless you slaughtered the animal. And the source says that this shomer, who ostensibly not only claimed that it was stolen, but also slaughtered it, what does he have to pay? The Kotoni Mishan Kefel, Tashlumi Kefel, says here he pays double. Tashlumi Kefel in, Tashlumi Arba B'Chamish, hello? A double payment, yes, but not the multiple 4 or 5. But what did Rabbi Yochanan say? Rabbi Yochanan said that under these very circumstances of a shomer swearing falsely, Nignav, subsequently slaughtering it, does have to pay 4 or 5. The Gemara answers that in this source there was no slaughtering. Hacha b'mayaskinon kagon she'achloi nevela. He was a bad guy, not only in his false oath, but didn't even bother slaughtering it. There was no slaughtering. Oh, there's no slaughtering, so there's only kefel to speak of. There's no 4 or 5. The Torah says that the 4 or 5 payment is only in the case of a formal slaughtering or a sale. Here we're focusing on the slaughtering idea. There was no slaughtering in this source. Notice we have an angular brackets. Following the angular brackets, we're going to have a new teaching of Rav Chiya Bar Abba, quoting Rabbi Yochanan, dealing, as I said, so it's another topic. We tried to make it clear at the beginning of this section of Gemara that there are multiple topics that will be, featured as the Gemara unfolds. So that's what happens after the angular brackets. We have a note in the margin as to why we have these brackets, a starred note, and it reads, Tam l'sograyim elu, the reason for these angular brackets, l'harois, de'ikir hadiyun b'shitas Rabbi Yochanan, de'tainas ganav tovach u'mocha chayav, da'alveis tayem, that the main discussion, the basic discussion concerning Rabbi Yochanan's teaching that a Toyin Tainas Ganav, the Shomer who claims falsely under oath that it was stolen, and that he, the Shomer, if he slaughters it or sells it, pays 4 or 5, that discussion has ended. Besochas Ograim, within the bracketed section, Hagemora Matzia Hatsaos Chilufiois. The Gemara will be suggesting alternative answers to the answer that we gave of Ochla Nevela, the Tshuva Shochla Nevela. These are alternative answers. La Sheila to the question, Loma Bamoko Shel Hechon Shari Muskarak Kefa Velo Dalad Vehe. Why, in the source, does it mention only Kefel and not the 4-5? That was presented as a question on Rabbi Yochanan, but we gave an answer. The answer was the Ochla Nevela. Now, you notice triangles under our Mivneh, our structural note. Sidra, we indicate Sidra Shahatzos Chilufios Lechuva B'mokim Shochle Nevela. Instead of giving the answer of Ochle Nevela, so why not give these answers? And you'll see a whole series of, let's say, alternative answers that could have been given. Let's go through the Gemara now. V'lishni le, why did Rabbi Yochanan not answer Kagon She'achloi Trefa, which would be a case where it was slaughtered and it was discovered that there's an internal organ deficiency rendering it a Trefa, which is something that's forbidden to eat, and we would call that a Shechita She'ein Aruya. It's a shechita that doesn't lead, that's unfit, literally, a shechita that's unfit, meaning it's a shechita that's unfit for eating. And a shechita like that, the thinking would be, does not generate the 4-5 payment. So why wasn't that answer given? The more answer is, Rebbe Meir, because the source wasn't in accordance with Rebbe Meir, Diomar shechita, Sheina Ruyo Shma shechita, an unfit shechita, meaning unfit doesn't lead to it being an animal kosher for eating, is nevertheless considered an act of shechita that the Torah would have obligated 4-5. So why is there no 4-5? So we answered, because there was no shechita whatsoever. Ah, v'lishni le b'ven pekua. Why not have said that the reason there's no 4-5 is because the animal that was the subject of the source, the shor, was an animal that doesn't require shechita? How can that be? So if one slaughters a pregnant animal and the fetus emerges alive and it grows into an adult animal, that animal, having been part of a mother animal that was slaughtered, in itself, this fetus that even though it grows into an adult animal, it doesn't need shechita. The shechita of the mother covered it, so to speak. So could you not have defended Rabbi Yochanan by explaining the source that says there's only kefel and not 4-5, because there was no need for slaughtering, because it was talking about a ben pekua? The Gemara responds, Karebi Meir, the source is in accordance with the memory. In fact, we said that a moment before. It's in accordance with Rabbi Meir, Diomar ben pekua, Teun Shechita. He disagrees with the halacha we just featured. The ben pekua is that fetus found within a slaughtered mother. Rabbi Meir says it does require a separate shechita, a separate slaughtering. So that to rely on explaining the shor described as a ben pekua, and hence there was no shechita, would not be accurate according to Rabbi Meir. V'lishni le, could it not have been said as follows, Kigon sha'omad bedin, v'omru lo tse tain lo, that the case involving the shomer who denied having the animal, and turns out that he was lying, and the witnesses testified that he ate it. In fact, he did slaughter it, but he did so after the court ordered him pay up. Say, Tainlo, go and pay up. Once the court issues such a ruling, he loses the ganav status and becomes considered a gazlan. The Torah, when it speaks about the 4-5 payment, that's when you're dealing with a ganav. And a ganav, technically speaking, is a thief that committed his theft in a secretive, elusive, surreptitious fashion, so as not to be discovered. A gazlan is someone classified as an open robber. There, the Torah doesn't obligate the multiple payments. So could this source have not been set up as a case where there was a formal slaughtering, but was after the court ordered him to pay? You notice that we have a circular or curlicue type brackets. If you skip them momentarily, after having heard this last suggestion, the Gemara says, you know, you're right, it could have said that, Amri. We respond and say, there are other answers that could have been given, there are other explanations how there could have in fact been a slaughtering. Without coming on to the Nevela answer, there was an actual slaughtering yet, there's no 4-5. But the Gemara gave one answer, one of several different answers. So Gemara explained, Sha'ochloi Nevela. It could have explained, it was after the court said, say, Tainlo. It could have said, it was a case involving Shutuf Shetofacha, which we'll explain when we get to that a little further, dealing with a partner that slaughtered it without his other partner's awareness. But we gave the example of Ochloi Nevela. Now, within the brackets, we present you with the background for what was said in the third triangle. That after the court says, say Tainlo, if the thief or the shomer would go and slaughter it, there would be no 4-5 payment. Now, the Gemara in the brackets. Daha Omar Rava, say Tainlo, if the court issued its final ruling, you must go and pay. Tavachu mochar poter. If at that point he slaughters or sells it, there is no additional multiple payments. My taima. Why is that? Kevon de paske lemilse. Since there was a formal court ruling, v'tavachu mochar, and even after that he went ahead and either slaughtered it or sold it, have a gazlan. He is like an open robber. Gazlonim are not expected to pay the 4-5 multiple payments. That's something that only a ganov, the sneaky, surreptitious type thief, pays. However, if the court issued such a statement, it appears you are obligated to pay, that's a statement that might be made prior to the formal verdict. If at that point, the we call earlier point in time, the Tavachu Mochar, Chayav, if he were to slaughter after the court said, Chayav Atalitainlo, slaughtered and then or sold it, he would be obligated to pay the multiple payments. My taima, called kamadolo psikole, as long as there hasn't been the formal verdict handed in, let me read that again, called kamadolo psikole milsa, as long as the matter hasn't been finally decided or finally issued, akati ganov, who he still retains the ganov identity, which does obligate him in the 4-5 payment as a result of either tovachu mochar. So our question is, in accordance with the last triangle, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan give this answer of Omad Bedin V'Omrulo Tzei Tenlo? And even if there was a formal Shechita, it would not result in the 4-5 payment. So the Gemara says, you know, you're right. It could have, such an answer could have been given. Amri. We answer, Uletamech, according to you that's bothered by why wasn't that answer given, Lishnile, well, could this not have been given as an answer? Beshutuf shetovach shalomi das chavero. Let's take a look at Rashi. One or two down from where we are in the Gemara, in the Rashi commentary, Beshutuf shetovach shutfin shegonvu v'tovcho echod shalomi das chavero. Two people were participatory in the act of theft. One of them slaughtered without the knowledge of the other. Amrinu perek meruba, we said in the seventh perek, shepotu midalei vehei, there is an exemption from the 4 or 5 payment. The chamisha bokum rachmona v'lo chamisha chatzoi bokar v'hochalo tokarina utuvachoi kula b'chiyuva. Here we can't refer to the slaughtering as a slaughtering that was done totally with obligation. Dala chatzi shechavero have a toveach umocher achar haganov the potter. In as far as the half that the friend was obligated in concerning the initial theft, that's considered a type of slaughtering, or if it were a sale, that is after the theft, which is exempt. What Rashi here is alluding to is, of course, a much more involved discussion in the seventh perek. Aval ledas chavero, if one of the thieves did the slaughtering with the knowledge of his partner in crime, Misham and Shneim both have to pay the multiple payment. The word tachas that you see in the Torah includes someone who was acting as an agent on behalf of the other. And you don't claim ein shliach ledvar avera. Let's go back to the Gemara. We just pointed out that there was even another answer that could have been given whereby there was shchita but still an exemption from the 4 or 5. Elo chado mitre utlosa nokat. In giving the answer of ochloi nevela, we were giving one of two or three different answers that could have been given. All of them defending Rabbi Yochanan's position that in a case of toyin tainas ganov, tovachu mochar, you would have to pay, the shomer would have to pay 4 or 5. The Omar Rebchio Barabo Om Rav Yochanan. We have a topic heading on the side, the Nosei, which reads, Hatayin Tainas Ganov Ba'Aveda. Someone who found a lost article was then charged by the owner who give me my lost article, and he claims that it was stolen. Mishalem Tashlume Kefel. And when it turns out that he's lying, he'll have to pay the double payment. After presenting the halacha, there will be a question raised, followed by an answer, and we'll go back and forth. And hence, we have under our makav, our mivneh, our structural note, the triangle being featured as a makav, an attempt to keep track. With the point facing up, kushios, they represent questions. Inverted triangle indicates answers. Now the Gemara. So v'yomer Rav Chiya bar Abba, omer Rav Yochanan, toyin tainas ganav be'aveda, one who claims regarding a found lost article that it was subsequently stolen, and it turns out that the finder lied, mishalim tashlume kefel, he has to pay the double payment. My taima, why is that? Dichtiv, in the pasuk it says al kol aveda asher yoimar etc. Yishalem shnayim. Regarding lost articles, yishalem shnayim, a double payment has to be made, so that you have a Torah reference to the teaching of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Esve Rabbi Abba bar Momo le Rabbi Chia bar Abba. We have a Tanaic source. Raises a question. Ki ten ish in the Pasuk, which is from Shmos Perikov Beis Pasuk Tes. You can see on the side we've quoted part of the Pasuk in a more extensive fashion than here, which reads on the side, Ki ten ish al reyehu chamor ushor osev v'chol behemol ishmor. So in the Pasuk you see the expression Ki ten ish. Ein, we continue in our Gemara, Ein nesinas koton klum. If a minor, as opposed to ish is an adult, if a minor gives something to a shomer to watch, the entrusting by a minor and subsequent false oath on the part of the shomer would not obligate the shomer in the penalties that are usually associated with a false oath. We continue. V'ein li'ela shenosnoi kishukotin v'tovoi kishukotin. I would think that the exemption on the part of the shomer, if he swears falsely, is when the item given to him was given, it was given by someone who was a minor, and the claim for the item was made when the owner was still a minor. All of this being a function of the word ish that appears in the pasuk, which indicates an adult. An adult owner will generate the obligations of a shomer on a shomer who lies. What about the following? Nosnoi shukotin v'tovik shugodol minayin. An item entrusted by an owner who was still a minor, who claimed the return of the item after he became an adult. From where do we know that the shomer who lies under those circumstances is also exempt? Talmud Lomar, Ad hu Elohim yavo dvar shnehem. And we darshan this, we explain this, Ad shite nesina utviya shoven kechad. There is no violation on the part of the shomer until the giving and the claim are at the same status. In other words, both, not only the claim of the return of the item by an ish, by an adult, but the initial giving also, the initial entrusting to the shomer would have to have been by an adult. Ve'im Isa, if Reb Chia bar Abba is to be accepted, Teve Nami Ke'aveda, what did Reb Chia bar Abba say? That one who is Tainas Ganav Aveda does pay Kefel. Why should we not view the giving of the item to the Shomer when he was a minor and then claimed as an adult? Why should that be any less than a found article? Something given to someone, to a shomer, to a bailey, by a minor. Could you not view that as if the shomer found the item? And as an adult, the owner comes and claims back the item, like the owner of an Aveda comes and lays claim for the item. According to Rab Chia bar Abba, even though there was, who said, Tayin is Ganav pays Kefel, even though there was no formal Nisina, there was no giving of the item, it was a found item. It's enough that the claim is made for it. There was no formal giving and or entrusting. And yet, there is a double payment made. So why does this Tanaic source indicate that there is no double payment made unless there's a formal giving by an adult? Omar Lay, so we answer. And there's Rabbi Chia bar Abba answers Rabbi Abba bar Momo. Hocha v'mayaskinon. In this Brisa, that we said there is exemption, kegain she'achloi kishu katan. The item that had been entrusted by the miner was consumed by the shomer when the owner was still a miner. Avol kishu godomai. Well, according to what you're saying then, what are you implying then, if it was eaten, consumed by the shomer, when the mafkid had already become an adult? Hachi nami demeshalim. Are you going to say then, under circumstances like that, that the shomer would have to pay kefel? I emphasize, even though there was no formal nesina, there was no formal giving. Well, ihachi, if based on your answer, we should in fact imply thusly, aditana, instead of teaching ad shetehe nesina utviya shavin kechad, that there's no shomer obligation for lying, there's no penalty for his lying until the giving and the claim are made by an adult. There's an additional point that would have to have been stated. Listening, it should have said, Achite achila utviya shavin be'kechad. According to what you implied by your answer, that it was the exemption was based on achloi kshu katan, but achloi kshu gadol would have resulted in obligation, even though there was no initial nesina, initial entrusting, because it was entrusted by a minor. Then the source leaves room for us to conclude something inaccurate, because the source said that obligation arises only when there's an initial nesina that's done by an adult. That's not necessary according to the answer that you gave and the and its implication. According to your answer and the implication, the obligation arises, that means the violation of the shomer leads to his punishment and obligation if the achila and tvia are done when the initial party, when the owner was an adult. Omar lei, so Rabbi Fia Bar Abba says, Tani ad shetehe achila utvia shoven keechod. So then have that stated. Namely, even though the initial nesina was non-existent because it was given by a minor, and we can in that sense apply or parallel it to Aveda. However, the source that taught exemption is because the item was consumed when the original owner was still a minor. However, had the item that was entrusted by a minor, paralleling it to the case of Aveda, that item then consumed when the owner had reached adulthood, and the subsequent claim being made by the adult owner, in fact, that would have resulted in a double payment along the lines of what Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Om Rabbi Yochanan, originally said. Rav Ashi Omar Lo Domi. Rav Ashi has a second approach. You notice we have a number two, where this would be an answer following the immediate presentation of the source as a question on Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Ashi says, listen, the source deals with something entrusted by a minor, and you're raising that as a question on the source which had entrusted by a minor and no kefel payment, and raising that as a question on Rabbi Yochanan, who spoke about there is a kefel payment in the case of Tainis Ganaba Veda. There's no question because Lo Domi, they're not comparable cases. Aveda, in the case of a lost item that you found and claimed it was stolen, etc. Ko'asyo mikayach ben das. It came, in other words, the item was owned by an adult. Ben das means someone who was a man of full mind, which is associated with an adult. The question that you raised was regarding an item entrusted by a minor. V'ha lo asya mikayach ben das. It's an item that didn't come from an adult, and hence we'll say there's less grounds for creating obligation on the shomer that lies. The Omar Reb Chiya bar Abba and Reb Yochanan. Again, you can see we're maintaining this series of Reb Chiya bar Abba teachings. And again, a case of Hatayin Tainas Ganov Bepikodon, but there's a new halacha he teaches. Eino Chayov Ach Yichbor Bemiktsas V'yoyde Bemiktsas. This is the beginning of a very well-known sugya that we refer to as the sugya of Moide Bemiktsas, partial confession. On the side, we have a topic heading we call Moide Bemiktsas, Kemechayev Lishova Shvua, when a person is claimed money from someone and he admits a partial admission, does that obligate him from the Torah to swear to bolster his claim? Machloikes Amoraim im hu din b'shuas hashemrim. We'll see an Amoraic disagreement regarding applying this to Shomrim, someone who was asked to watch something, and when the claim is made, give me back the item, you confess partial, meaning if you were given, let us say, four pencils to watch, and you say, you didn't give me four pencils to watch, you gave me only two pencils to watch. That's a partial confession. Does that obligate the Bailey to swear that only two were given to me and I don't owe you the other two? That would be an example of applying the rule of Moide Bemiktsas, obligating an oath to be made in the case of Shvuas HaShomrim. Or, maybe in the case of Shomrim, the Shomer, even if he denies totally, complete denial, he will nevertheless have to swear to bolster his claim. The idea of Moide Bemiktsas applies to cases of loans, where a lender says, you know, you owe me $100. I loaned you $100. And the borrower says, no, you didn't loan me $100. You loaned me only $50. I owe you only $50. That would be Moide Bemiktsas, partial confession, in the case of a loan, a halva. And in a case like that, the borrower would have to swear that he doesn't owe the other $50. What would be if the borrower denies having received anything? We call that koifer bakoil, total denial. If someone would have the nerve after having received a loan to totally deny, he must be telling the truth. And as such, the Torah wouldn't obligate him to take a shvua. The Gemara will elaborate on these points as we go further. So now we turn back to the Gemara, where Reb Chiya bar Abba tells us that a shomer who's tainis ganov, claiming that the item entrusted or the items entrusted were stolen, he's eino chayov. He is not going to have to pay the kefel ad sheichbor b'miktsas v'yede b'miktsas until you have a situation where he confesses partial and denies partial. My taima, what's the basis for this? The Yomar Kra, the Pasuk says in the section of the Torah that deals with Shomrim, with Baileys, Ki Hu Zeh. Now that expression, Ki Hu Zeh, is taken to mean he admits partial. Upliga de Rabchia bar Yosef. The approach just stated is at odds, differs with Rabchia bar Yosef's approach. We're using a volcano shape to highlight the dinim of Rabchia bar Yosef, as we've indicated under our Mivneh heading. So we point out that the din of Moida B'miktsas as being a, we'll say, basis for imposing an oath on a shomer is Reb Chiya Bar Abba's teaching, but it's not something that Reb Chiya Bar Abba, Bar Yosef, would agree with. Reb Chiya Bar Yosef will tell you that Moida B'miktsas as the grounds for imposing an oath is shayach, has relevance only in the case of loans. In the case of an entrusted item, a shomer will be obligated to swear even if he is in full denial. The Omar Reb Chiya Bar Yosef. We continue at the top of Daf Kuf Zayin. Eruv Parshios Kosuv Kan. The Torah literally mixes together two different topics. The Chiksiv Ki Hu Zeh, the expression Ki Hu Zeh, which alludes to partial admission, Amilve Hu Dechtiv, even though it's found written in the Torah in the context of Shomrim, it doesn't have relevance to Shomrim. It has relevance to loans. But in the case of Pikadon, even without partial confession, if a Shomer denies completely, I never received that item that you claim you entrusted by me, the owner can say, well then, swear to that effect. Even though, we repeat, even though the Shomer denies completely. As far as Rav Chiya Bar Yosef is concerned, the Torah imposes a shvua on a shomer, even if he's in total denial. The Torah that spoke about Ki Hu Zeh, a shvua being imposed when there's moda b'miktsas, that has relevance to the case of a borrower of money. He who denies having received the full amount, admitting that he received part of the amount, then he would have to swear. But if he were to deny completely having received a loan, he would not have to swear as far as the Torah is concerned. You'll notice that we have a bracketed section. If you notice on the side, we have a starred note. And it reads, B'secha Sograyim, within the brackets, Nimtza HaHezber L'Reb Chiya Bar Yosef. You'll see the explanation for Reb Chiya Bar Yosef. The Eruv Parshis Kosov Kan, regarding what he said, that the Ki Hu Zeh, partial confession, results in Shavua obligation, applying only to loans. Acharei HaSograyim, HaGemora Mevi'o, S. Rami Bar Chama, after the bracketed section, the more introduces Rami Bar Chama, Shecholek al Reb Chiya Bar Yosef, Be'inyin Moida B'miktsas B'Shomrim, who disagrees with Reb Chiya Bar Yosef regarding partial admission when it comes to Shomrim guards. According to Reb Chiya Bar Yosef, as we have said already, Shvuas HaShomrim, the oath imposed on Baileys who make claims of exemption. In their case, lo boy shiur b'miktsas. There's no need for partial admission. L'Rami Bar Chama, ein hashomer nishba elo im kain Hoideh b'mitzas. A shomer will not be obligated to swear unless he admits a partial admission. Now that I hope the structure is clear, we can go into the brackets, and we have a topic heading, the nosei, hasbara, or I should hasvora, lomo hatur mechayeves hamoyde b'mitzas. Why does the Torah obligate, in the case of a loan, someone who admits partial admission to the amount being claimed from him? Now, this logic will be presented in contrast to the case of a shomer. So now the Gemara, within the brackets, umay shno milve, what is different about a case of a loan where, and now as Rashi says, you're uprooting the posuk, the ki huze expression, from its location regarding shomrim, and you say it refers to the case of loans. So, what's different about halva? What makes halva unique? The Gemara answers, Kidder Rabba. The explanation is in accordance with what Rabba teaches. And you'll have to note by what the long marking, we have a long answer. In other words, we have to go through all of these lines in order to really appreciate what Rabba is teaching. The Omar Rabba, Mitnei Ma Omro Torah Moida B'Mitzas HaTayna Yeshava. Why does the Torah say that when you confess partially, you have to swear? You have to swear to bolster your claim that you owe only part and are exempt from the other part of that which is being claimed from you. You know why the Torah wants you to swear? Chazaka ein odom meiz ponov b'fnei bal choyvoy. We have a human reality. The assumed status of people is that they would never be so bold as to lie or completely deny in a lying fashion to someone who gave a loan. V'hai, and the person who admits partially, b'kuli boy d'nifbere, he would like to deny completely. The idea of denying is associated often with trying to buy time in order to get the money together to pay off the loan. So you have someone that is being claimed from. A lender is claiming from a borrower, pay me the money I loaned you. We already established that a person would not have the nerve to deny completely owing the money that he was lent. He would like to deny completely. V'haydelo kafre, that which he doesn't deny completely. Mishum de'ein odo meiz ponav, a person would not have the nerve to deny completely. Ubekuli boy de lo delay. In truth, he should confess to the full amount. Behind the koffer leba mikzas, that which he is denying partial, sovar, he figures, the person calculates, imo dino leba kule, tova li bekule, if I admit owing the total amount, he's going to attempt to collect for me the total amount. I don't have the money though. Ishtamet li miho hashto adahavu li zuze uparano. I'm going to try to avoid him for right now until I get the money and then pay up everything that I owe. So this is the thinking of the moide b'miktas. Let's go over the points again. Person received a loan. He knows that he owes the money. He wouldn't have the nerve to deny the total amount. he would love to deny the total amount, but to in order to push off the lender from pressuring him to pay up. I don't have the money right now. But he doesn't have the nerve to deny completely. So what does he do? He denies partially. Hopefully that will enable him to, push off the lender in the meantime until he gets the full amount together. But all of this, of course, is involves, we'll say, a lie. Behilkach, therefore, Rama Rachmana Shvua Iluya, the Torah places upon the borrower a Shvua. The hope is that instead of swearing falsely, he will admit to the full amount. So that the Shvua is imposed in order to motivate the borrower to come forth and admit the full amount. For Gabi Malve, or Gabi Milve, who the Iko Lemei Marhochi. This whole analysis is relevant in the case of a loan, meaning the analysis being that a person would not deny completely. If a borrower were to deny completely, it must be that he's telling the truth. Because, as we said, otherwise, after having received a favor from someone, you wouldn't have the nerve to lie and deny completely. What we are fearful of is that the partial confession is itself false. So we impose the shvua. Avogabi pikadain meyezu meyez. But when it comes to a shomer who accepted to watch something, accepted to do the owner a favor, he doesn't have a sense of obligation upon him the same way a borrower of money has a sense of obligation to someone who extended him a loan. The shomer didn't receive any favors. Therefore, it's within the realm of possibility that he would lie. He'll deny completely. We don't have that deterrent that we had in the case of a borrower, so that a shomer who denies completely, we cannot be so sure that he must be telling the truth. And therefore, in the case of a shomer who denies completely, says Rav Chiya bar Yosef, the Torah imposes upon him an oath so as to come forth with the truth. That would hopefully motivate him to come forth with the truth. And the truth is not reflected by his complete denial. Therefore, said Rav Chiya bar Yosef that the expression ki huzeh, which indicates partial confession, being grounds for an oath, that has relevance to loans. Even though the pasuk is found in the context of shomrim of guards, he says eruv parshios kosuf kander, two different topics that are mixed together. In other words, a pasuk that has relevance to the case of loans is stuck in to a section of the Torah dealing with shomrim. And that the idea of modem mixes has relevance only to the case of loans and not to the case of shomrim. I'm sure that everyone understands that this is all by virtue of the power of Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition. This is something that, unless you have a tradition to this effect, you can't possibly say that unrelated topics all of a sudden surface in other sections of the Torah. Toni Rami Bar Chama. And now we have Rami Bar Chama, who, you'll see, disagrees with Rav Chiya bar Yosef. Arba Shoimrim, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Tzrichin Kfir B'mitzas V'do B'mitzas. The four different types of Baileys are obligated to swear to bolster whatever claims of innocence that they may be making, only if they admit a partial amount, partial confession. V'elohein, the four shomrim are, shomer chinom, the unpaid Bailey, he who watches for gratis, that watches gratis, v'hashoyel, one who borrows, nosei socher, a paid Bailey, v'asocher, and a renter. Omar Rava, my time of the Rami Bar Chama. What is the basis for Rami Bar Chama that says that the concept of moida b'mitzas as that which generates an oath obligation, where does Rami get that from? Well, we answer, notice we have a long answer marking, Shomer Chinam Behed Yuxibbe, regarding the unpaid Bailey, the Pasuk of says, Ki Hu Zeh. That's the Pasuk that indicates partial confession. That's written in the context, the section of the Torah that deals with the unpaid Shomer. Shomer Sochar, Yalef Nesino Nesino, Mishomer Chinam, through a Gzera Shava, where the word Nesino or Yitain, a verb form involving the word Nesino, is found in the Parsha of Shomer Socher and in the Parsha of Shomer Chinam. So through the Gzera Shava, we learn Shomer Socher from Shomer Chinam. Shoyel, regarding the borrower, the Pasuk says, V'chi Yishal. The topic of Shoyel comes on the heels of the Shomrim that we just mentioned, and it's introduced by the letter Vav, V'chi Yishal. Vav Moisif Al Inyan Rishon. It serves as a continuation of the previous topic. And in the previous topic, Moda B'Mitzas was alluded to. Hence, a borrower also won't be obligated to swear when he makes his claim of exemption unless he confesses partially as still owing. Socher, a renter. Well, a renter is dependent on how you classify the renter. E lemandomer kishomer socher, hainu shomer socher. There is an opinion that parallels the socher to a paid Bailey. And just like by a paid Bailey, we already established with Gzera Shavah and Nesina Sina, he is made to swear only in the case of Moida B'Mitzas, so to the socher, so to the renter. E lemandomer kishomer chinam, hainu shomer chinam. According to the opinion that says a socher is viewed as a shomer chinam, so we saw that the pasuk is found in the context of Shomer Chinam, and that will include the Socher as well, the pasuk of Ki Hu Zeh. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.